just wanna party. Party just for you. We just wanna party. Party just for you.
And you're listening to 90.7
FM
WGXC
ACRA.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in ACRA, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show, and we have a busy show for you today. Jess Chapp will give us a story about Kite's Nest in Hudson, the education center and project along the waterfront there, and we'll also hear all about hay from Brendan Donegan and his ag report coming up this hour. It's been a wet season for hay farmers. We'll also hear about the Burdett Birthing Center in Rensselaer County, whether it will close or not. There was a public hearing held on Monday and by Attorney General Letitia James, and we'll hear some reactions at that hearing later in the hour. On the WGXC Morning Show, first we'll hear the local news and national headlines from the Public News Service and the better weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. It all starts in just a moment. Stay tuned to the WGXC Morning Show.
The news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
The Catskill Town Board meets every first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at the Catskill Town Hall and holds a committee meeting the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. You can turn out in person at the Catskill Town Hall to speak at these meetings or tune in to a live web stream through the Catskill Town Board and WGXC. Go to wgxc.org/listen or click on the listen button at wgxc.org to tune in to any of the Catskill Town Board meetings, the first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. and the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at wgxc.org and townofcatskillny.gov.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Sun Common, supporting vibrant communities across New York for over 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Michael and Lisa Lindsay Hogg of Claverick, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe with the WGXC Daily News for Wednesday, September 20th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Molly Burke reports in the Times Union that on September 15th, multiple synagogues across the country were targeted with bomb threats, including Temple Israel in Albany. The bomb threats came as the Jewish holiday Rosh Hashanah began. Other bomb threats were made to synagogues in Los Angeles, San Francisco, Cleveland, and New York City. Rabbi Wendy Anderson said that police officers came to the synagogue when the evening service was almost complete and asked everyone to move outside. No bomb was found inside, and services resumed the next day. Anderson said, quote, "Why does some jerk with a phone and the ability to Google when is Rosh Hashanah get to interfere with our service?" Unquote. Because of recurrent recent anti-Semitic acts in America, the Albany Synagogue is well practiced in emergency drills. Albany Mayor Kathy Sheehan attended services there on September 16th and said, quote, "I went to Rosh Hashanah services to ensure that the members of Temple Israel know that they are not alone in this fight against hatred and bigotry, and I am grateful for the warm and welcoming reception I received," unquote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Paul Kirby reports in the Daily Freeman that the Public Service Commission promised in-person public hearings about Central Hudson's proposed gas and electricity rate increases, but they have yet to happen. On September 20th, the utility holds its final online hearings with the Public Service Commission about the price hikes. State Senator Michelle Hinchey continues to campaign against the rate increases, saying, quote, Central Hudson should not be considered for a rate increase, especially while it's actively under investigation by the Public Service Commission for ongoing billing malfunctions. Attempting to resolve their shortcomings by burdening customers with higher rates is an unjust and unacceptable approach, unquote. Central Hudson wants a one-year 16% increase in delivery rate for electricity and 19% for gas beginning July 1st, 2024. Currently, the number of Central Hudson residential customers in arrears grew by 1,044% in the last year to $96 million, while non-residential arrears grew by 1,971% to $29 million. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Brian Roser reports for New York State of Politics that counties throughout New York State are looking for election workers. Jeremy Zellner, the Democratic Elections Commissioner in Erie County, said, quote, they're critical. We simply can't run our elections without good poll inspectors. They are actually the people who are at the table signing people in. They're the people giving you your ballot. And you know, there's thousands of them that work that one day who keep the election going every year, unquote. Currently, elections in New York are held on multiple days. Brian Abram, the Republican Elections Commissioner in Chautauqua County, said usually about 400 people help with elections there, but they only have around 330 right now. Abram said, quote, it just seems like right now we're all in the same boat of trying to find, you know, individuals that are willing to be part of what we're all about, unquote. Anyone interested in getting paid to work the polls can contact their county's Board of Elections. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics, and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, September 20th. Local early morning temperatures range from 44 degrees in Medusa to 54 in Voorheesville. Regional average soil temperature is 60 degrees. And a cold morning turns into a comfortable afternoon. We hit 72 degrees at 3 p.m. Skies will be clear. Overnight we dip to 45 degrees, then tomorrow tops out at 70 degrees at 3 p.m. Friday, still looking nice, hit 72 degrees. Saturday, rain returns to the region and we get a high of 66. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 1:07 a.m., high tide at 6:30 a.m., low tide again at 12:53 p.m., and high tide once again at 6:57 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 69 degrees and the tide strength will be average. Sunset today will be at 6:45 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:36 a.m. Looking way up, we see G3 class storms were generated by the recent Hadouken impact. Plasma winds will be average at 518 kilometers per second with a thin density of 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently terrible till dark, then fair below 60 megahertz overnight. There are low chances of aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 143, and this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Signal Hill, Newfoundland, Thursday morning, December the 12th, 1901.
Siamo lieto di poter rievocare in poche parole le esperienze delle prime trasmissioni radiotelegrafiche a grandi distanze da me felicemente eseguite attraverso l'Oceano Atlantico il 12 dicembre 1901. Queste esperienze provarono conclusivamente che la trasmissione e la ricezione delle onde elettriche non erano affatto limitate, come a quel tempo credevano tutti gli scienziati alle brevi distanze, bensì potevano essere utilizzate per le comunicazioni fra il vecchio ed il nuovo mondo.
Tonight, we'll take a look at the music industry and try to see what happened.
I don't know why you're looking for it.
Getting the record on the radio.
That's the title of the big tune.
Like this. Some promotion men for big records. record companies use a variety of illegal approaches to get radio play for their records.
Please, whatever job he takes, make sure it's something quiet.
Pop music is not just an ordinary business. With the listeners mean revenues. That best-selling record albums.
It's run by very organized people. Very organized. An amateur like you can't go up against professionals.
Good qualities. Ethics, you know.
Hey, come on. We are not serious.
There is no professional ethics.
Because huge amounts of money are at stake.
The question is, how far will they go to achieve their objective?
Getting the record on the radio. Played again, again, and again. Fight hard to get their records on the air. Played again, again, and again.
On the radio.
On the air. Tight playlist. On the air. Top 40. On the air. Top 30. Top 20. Or even fewer.
The record business is a business of big winners.
The story begins with a hit single and a hit album. TV.
The vicious game.
Paying them anything, anybody at a radio station, to get a record play.
Run by very organized people. Very organized. It isn't fair.
Drugs used to get a record played on the radio.
What?
Did you see that kind of thing?
Be bad. Be naughty. Say it.
Formula for success: getting the record on the radio. Play it again, and again. Fight hard to get their records on the air. Play it again, again, and again.
You understand that?
On the air. Tight playlist. On the air. Top 40. On the air. Top 30. Top 20.
Next day, number one, baby.
Number one, baby. You are crazy.
No, I can't, but I did.
It also brings us to the end of the first part. Whatever you do, stay tuned for part two because it's going to be more than exciting.
Turn on the radio.
But there's no evidence of that, you say. There must be other explanations.
You're in shock. Trust me.
You've got no right to say that.
You all know the rules.
You got a big one. And there are very few. But when you catch a hit, when you catch a big winner, the earnings are incredible.
Getting the record on the radio. Play it again, again, and again. Fight hard to get their records on the air. Play it again, again, and again.
Again,
getting the record on the radio.
Play it
again, again, and again. Yeah. Fight hard to get their records on the air. Play it again.
The same thing over and over and over again.
On the air. Tight playlist. On the air. Top 40. On the air. Top 30. Top 20.
Congratulations.
I just killed your fucking radio.
Normal programs will be interrupted to give later on the spot reports if they are received. Meanwhile, we go back to our scheduled program.
Hi, and welcome back to Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. I'm Teresa Golden.
And I'm Jean Thomas.
Today's chat is about more catalog buying. On an earlier episode, we reviewed the realities of buying seeds from catalogs and discovered that there was a whole other world of catalogs specializing in flowering bulbs and in nursery stock. Perennial plants also appear in many catalogs. So, Jean, why do we need another whole episode about bulb and plant buying? Isn't a catalog a catalog? What's the difference?
Well, one of the biggest differences is price. A packet of seed is a few dollars and has great potential. Your major investment is your time to bring all that potential to fruition. There's usually a much bigger cash investment in bulbs and plants. Also, there's usually a bigger investment in space and time. So if you don't read a catalog accurately, your mistakes will be on a much larger scale.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. Let's start with trees and shrubs. I'm always amazed at what I call the magic beans product. My favorites are the multi-fruit or multi-flowering trees. You can get a fruit cocktail tree. It's an assortment of peaches, nectarines, plums, and apricots grafted onto one trunk. Or a 3-in-1 butterfly bush. Or a 5-in-1 pear tree. This is where you'd better read the small print. If you're an experienced gardener, these can be a fun novelty. If they survive, you have bragging rights. An inexperienced gardener might be discouraged for life. These plants are usually small, bare root twigs, and the shipping costs can be prohibitive. Usually, the first thing I look for is the chart of shipping and handling costs, usually listed on the order form. Spending an extra $10 or more on a gamble can be painful. I recommend that rookies use a technique I've perfected. Shop through a catalog, make your list of plants and prices and shipping costs, put the list inside the catalog and set it aside. Go back another day and look at your list. This time, check to see what zone the plant is hardy to, what's the actual size of the plant being shipped, look up the mature size of the plant so you can reserve the space in your yard, and the requirements for light, water, and, in our area, deer protection. If you still want the order, go for it. If you're having second thoughts, maybe a trip to a local garden center might be in order. My motto about woody plants in particular is, time is money. This translates to, would you rather buy a bare root, 2-foot-tall baby tree and nurse it along, or would you rather spend twice or three times as much for one that's several years older and proportionately bigger? The bigger one has received all the TLC from the nursery growers that you'd be providing the baby tree. I'm at an age where I'd rather not wait a few extra years, but there are good reasons for each school of thought.
Okay, sticking with woody plants for now, when is it better to buy from a catalog?
Well, if you want to plant a significant number of plants and you can protect them to adulthood, for instance, many of the fast-growing hedge favorites, such as lilac and rose of Sharon, or oak and maple varieties could be bought in multiples. There are several catalogs that offer hardwoods and conifers in plugs from a single plant to a box of hundreds for forest buildings or restoration. Chief River Nursery Company was established in 1973 and offers a large range of native trees and shrubs, as well as an assortment of bare root fruit trees.
But aren't a lot of the plants offered in catalogs problematic?
Yes, they are. Many, such as burning bush, Siberian elm, and non-native honeysuckles, are prohibited in New York State. The catalog will have a notation at the end of the plant description listing states that don't allow these plants to be shipped in. I'm also wary of forsythia, mock orange, and butterfly bush because they can be aggressive and muscle their way into larger spaces than you might like. And I'll argue about Rose of Sharon until the cows come home and maybe let the cows eat the darn things.
Well, no opinions there. Let's move on to herbaceous plants, herbs and perennials.
Okay, that's a kinder and gentler world. Perennial herbs are included in most perennial catalogs, and you can go from as simple as a favorite collection of parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme to plant in a container outside your kitchen to a collection of salvias or a border of catmints. The live plants may be small at first, but they do grow quickly and fill up space for you. They're usually shipped in a 3-inch pot, and the packaging is amazing.
What about perennials? As a master gardener, I'm an enthusiast about native plants and pollinators.
Well, perennial flower, and don't forget grass, starter plants are not for weekend gardeners. Like any babies, they need a little more attention at first. Just like seed catalogs, the best plant catalogs give copious information about the requirements of the plant. There are many specialty catalogs available for perennials, and I must say the information provided for the plants is exemplary. These people want their plants to be successful and do their best to make them foolproof. Prairie Moon Nursery in Minnesota is celebrating its 40th year in business, and the title on the catalog says it all. Native seeds and plants for gardening and restoration. I'm still trying to get my head around how 1982 was 40 years ago. It doesn't feel that way. Prairie Moon, like many of the catalogs, offers pre-planned gardens designed for specific conditions. Theirs tend to be like little meadows.
And I'm sure there's catalog for more traditional gardens?
Oh, Teresa, absolutely. Bluestone Perennials has been around for 50 years, and their catalog is an oasis of logic. Their plants are listed alphabetically by Latin name and have a full set of guidelines and icons describing what each individual plant needs.
You said Prairie Moon offers collections of plants designed to plant all at once. Who else does that?
Well, a couple of my favorites are K. Van Bourgondien and Spring Hill. Both tend to stray into hyperbole in their catalogs, but have excellent mixtures and blends available. Van Bourgondien has one I'm going to tell Linda Levitt about.
Linda Levitt, who contributes to the Flower Power segment to the podcast? Why?
They have a Flower Power perennial blend of four really good deer-proof cutting flowers. They must have named it after her, right?
I think we've reached the end of perennials and woody plants. Tell us about buying bulbs from catalogs.
Okay, this comes with a warning. I'm bonkers about bulbs, and I will spend hours comparing prices between catalogs because I order them the only way you should, by the hundreds. I'm going to start with the assumption that our listeners have seen the seasonal retail displays in just about every store that sells plants or food. So I'll remind you of the basic rules. If an occasional dahlia or canna seduces you into bringing it home, be sure the bulb is healthy and has good solidity. If it's shriveled and weightless or mushy, do not adopt it. It cannot be saved at any discount. If it's healthy, go for it. Follow the planting instructions. Buying from a catalog gives you wider choices and less pressure. I feel the pain of somebody who yielded to temptation and brought home a bunch of bulbs and then had to navigate around them, waiting for the chance to do the planting. With mail order, you have several days of warning before you start to procrastinate.
But anyway, I just drove past a yard full of gladiolas. What catalog should I use to order some myself right now while I'm thinking of it? Or should I just go get some at the store so I don't have to wait for delivery?
You know, Teresa, maybe I'm so in love with bulbs because they're so contrary. If you see daffodils flowering, that means you can't buy bulbs to plant. There's some of the spring flowering bulbs that all require planting in the fall, so they can develop in the soil over the winter. And you can only buy them in the fall. For what comfort it might be, the catalogs start to arrive pretty early in the summer, so you can order them for delivery in the fall. So that works for gladiolas as well as daffodils.
All right, so I have a catalog. There seems to be two types. One has plant pornography with luscious photos on every page, and the other is all botanical with line drawings sprinkled on the pages.
Yep. The shiny, pretty ones have all of the basic bulbs with lots of varieties of each. Often they'll offer collections of stuff that looks great together and or bloom in sequence to lengthen the season. Van Bourgondien, Dutch Gardens, Breck are among these. They all bring in their bulbs from Holland. Pretty cool, huh? For the snobs and the greedy and the lovers of plant trivia, a catalog like McClure & Zimmerman is an absolute treat. There are many fewer illustrations and much more text. And lots more selections. Don't be afraid to expand your horizon. It can be an adventure. The first page tells you how to read the entries in the catalog. They'll even warn you if something's difficult to grow. All these catalogs don't just sell bulbs. They have corms, rhizomes, and tubers available.
What's the difference?
Well, they're all the basic starter roots from which plants develop. For our purposes, the only difference is that how you plant them will differ. Bulbs and corms must be buried to a specific depth, but rhizomes and tubers need to be shallower in the soil. Read the directions to be safe. For example, an iris or a peony planted too deep will not thrive and probably not even flower.
So what's the deal with those flowers I see in the summer like lilies and gladiolas and dahlias?
Well, we continue with the timing dilemma. By the time you see the flowers, it's too late to plant. Besides, few of the summer flowering flowers are hardy, so you have to buy them in the spring. All the same catalogs have spring editions, so once you're on a mailing list, you'll get both when you can do your ordering.
So am I understanding this correctly? Plants and trees and shrubs can be ordered from catalogs from spring to fall, but bulbs can only be ordered when they're not flowering?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm adding a list of some catalogs to the reference section of the transcript. It's by no means a complete list, and I'm not saying these are the best. I just happen to use these catalogs more frequently.
Any last advice?
Oh, Teresa, I almost forgot. Size matters. By that I mean you will see what looks like the exact same flower in two different catalogs, but with a wild difference in price. Always look closely in the descriptions. Often you'll find a difference in the size of the bulb, and that presents the determining factor for you. You can get smaller bulbs and let them develop in your garden over time, or get plants and flowers that may be bigger and sturdier.
Well, that's all, folks. No more catalog talk for today. Thanks for listening to Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. Until next time, this is Teresa and Jean.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
If you allow Ukraine to be carved up, is the independence of any nation secure? I'd respectfully suggest the answer is no.
President Joe Biden Tuesday implored world leaders at the UN General Assembly to stand firm against Russia's war in Ukraine. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky will meet with congressional leaders this week. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy says he wants to hear Ukraine's plan for victory and better understand how U.S. taxpayer dollars sent there are being spent. David Becker with the Center for Election Innovation and Research says it takes courage to push back against election disinformation.
Once you capitulate to disinformation in one regard, you're going to feed that beast. That beast is not going away. It's going to get bigger and it's going to be coming for you.
So far, 9 GOP-led states have withdrawn from ERIC, the state-run voter information sharing database that's a target of conspiracy theories. But others are sticking with it, including Georgia, where the Republican Secretary of State continues to get death threats. Tuesday was National Voter Registration Day. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro marked it by enacting what's known as a motor voter system.
This is a safe, secure, streamlined way to be able to get them to register and get them to participate in our democracy.
Pennsylvania is the 24th state to automatically register people when they get a driver's license. House Democrats marked the day by reintroducing the John Lewis Act. Representative Jim Clyburn of South Carolina says it rebuilds civil rights protections eroded by the U.S. Supreme Court. Clyburn cites the court returning to states with a history of voter suppression the power to change election laws without review by the Federal Department of Justice.
So this is not an issue that ought to just unify the members of this Congress. This should unify the people of this country.
Hunter Biden is suing the IRS, claiming two agents violated his privacy when they testified about his confidential tax information to Congress. IRS Supervisor Gary Shapley told a committee the president's son got preferential treatment.
There should not be a two-track justice system depending on who you are and who you're connected to.
Meanwhile, the House Republicans say they plan to subpoena Hunter Biden's bank records this week. In a sharp response, Democrats note this is coming when the government is just 10 days away from a shutdown. ABC News reports a longtime assistant to former President Donald Trump told federal investigators that Trump wrote to-do lists for her on the back of classified documents. When Trump later learned FBI agents wanted to interview the aide, he allegedly told her, "You don't know anything about the boxes." And the United Auto Workers Union is threatening to expand its strike unless it sees major progress in contract negotiations. UAW President Sean Fain says workers at more factories will join those who struck at three plants a week ago. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Old habits die hard, especially among election deniers. Last week, the Republican-dominated Wisconsin Senate voted to remove the state's nonpartisan elections administrator for recommending pandemic voting accommodations in the 2020 election. We reported in June on the effort not to renew election administrator Megan Wolf's term, which expired in July. Wolf had been vilified by extremists for recommending the mailing of absentee ballots to nursing home residents during the pandemic, rather than putting residents and election officials at risk. Conspiracy theorists claim Wolf attempted to sway the election results. When the six-member commission voted in June to reappoint Wolf, three Democrats strategically abstained, resulting in a 3-0 vote and short of the required majority, according to the Wisconsin Examiner. A recent state Supreme Court decision affirmed that such state officials could remain in place until a replacement was confirmed. Last month, a Senate committee held a 3-hour hearing on Wolf's reappointment, replete with conspiracy theories and accusations, according to the Milwaukee Courier. Then last week, the full Senate voted 22-11 to remove Wolf, despite not having an official nomination. Governor Tony Evers directed the Wisconsin Attorney General to sue Senate leaders, claiming the Senate's removal vote had no legal effect. For now, Wolf remains on the job. We have more on the story at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal. Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Hi, I'm Amy Halloran, and I'm here today with Ellie Markovich to talk about Story Harvest and this weekend's corn activities. Hi, Ellie.
Hi, Amy. So good to be here.
Yes, this is a little remote snippet from Maine. Ellie is going to be coming back to Troy on Friday, so that Saturday we can dive into all things corn, starting with a workshop from 10 to 12 a.m., and then the afternoon's activities are 2 to 5. So let's talk about your focus on corn and why it appeals to you as the multimedia storyteller you are.
Well, thank you for that introduction and reminder of what we're going to be doing in Troy. I'm so looking forward to coming home and being with everyone. Story Harvest is definitely holds a very special place in my heart, and so does corn. I just love being with corn, and I guess it goes back to my early memories of my childhood. My grandfather had a small farm. Actually, we would call probably not really a farm, but we just say hossa, which is a little plot of land, but enough to feed a family of seven kids. And he had, you know, animals and sugarcane and some corn in the back. And I just have this most wonderful memories of just running through the corn and just watching all the activities around corn. They were just part of our everyday life, and just going to the farm on Saturdays and just watch him just get some fresh corn and toss over the coals, and we would eat that. And then when it was time for lunch, you know, my grandmother would just make some angul, just get some corn, grind in a coffee grinder, and just add some water and cook that up. And the treats were broas, you know, just sweet corn with a little piece of farmer's cheese and some guava. And so I just grew up around corn as part of this staple grain and just doing all kinds of things and not really, you know, understanding what that means until my late 40s. And I start thinking about this idea of, you know, staple grains and, you know, really thinking about wheat in my life and the place it holds and how important it is to me. And then trying to understand how I am not of wheat, if that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. You're a corn person.
Yes. And I was trying to understand, you know, I was born in Brazil and really ate a lot of corn and a lot of cassava, which is yuca, or some people have other names for it, mandioca. And growing up around this root and around corn and having that being part of my daily bread. And then, you know, in my 40s, really getting to sourdough and fermenting and doing all those things. And just always have this sort of like double identity, if you will, just having corn there in the back, you know, talking about wheat and sourdough bread, and then, you know, turning around and having couscous for breakfast. And it's really part of our everyday life. And I start thinking about, you know, could I grow corn? Which kind of corn would that be? And I understood very fast that I could not make some of these dishes from my childhood with sweet corn. It needed to be flint corn, dent corn, a corn that would yield a lot of masa.
A lot of starch.
Yes, yes. And so when I lived in upstate New York, I was able to buy field corn, which would be the corn that, you know, people are growing for their animals. And then I started making a few things with that. I made a lot of pamonha, which is, well, in our home, we made pamonha frita, which is a very, very much like fritters, where you cut up the corn from the cob, the field corn, and you put in the blender with a couple eggs, and you can mix in some salt and some hot peppers, and then you deep fry them. They're just to die for. And so I start making some of that and really just trying to find this corn, and I couldn't find the corn. So when we moved to Maine 5 years ago through Maine Grain Alliance, I met some folks who were doing a seed restoration. And I was able to get some corn. And it was actually a gift from the Somali Bantu community here. And they have been growing dent corn, flint corn, that they brought home the seeds, and they work with several growers to get enough grains for their community. And he kindly shared this corn with me, and I just got so excited about growing this corn and grew the corn, and it was an amazing experience. And so that set me off to acting on some of the things they spoke of that really resonated with what I had experienced as a child, which they would say, you just need to live with corn. You just have to be with corn. And several people would just say that. It made me think of, I really do need to be with corn, and I need to live with corn. So that's what I set out to do for 2023. It was just to experience corn.
Be with corn. And so some of the things that, ways that we're going to invite people to be with corn on Saturday, can we give them a teaser of what the workshop will hold?
Yes. So what I'm hoping for is to create a table where we can experience corn in different ways. So some of us may not want to eat corn, which is fine too. So I will hope to create a sensory table where people can smell and they can touch the different grain. They can feel like, well, what would corn flour feel like? What a cornmeal feel like? What grits feel like? So we kind of understand a little bit more about different cultures and how they go about using the different ways of milling the grain and for different dishes. So that's, I'm hoping that people get to experience that. Also, we would talk about, you know, fermenting corn and sprouting corn, which is really not a practice that we engage very often here in the U.S. But if we think about, you know, fermenting corn, then not just for a probiotic drink, but also for beer, for alcohol purpose. And also just kind of tap into people's memories, you know, how people feel about corn, have they eaten corn, which kind of corn memories they have. And it's really fun to see how the different dishes go from one culture to another in different interpretations. And you and I have this conversation all the time, especially about a cake. And I hope, you know, maybe we'll get to taste some sweet corn as well.
Yeah, it's amazing the way that corn travels with us and we travel with corn through cultures, through time. It's really quite an amazing food. We're going to have the ability to grind corn on a bicycle-powered mill. So that would be very experiential. And Honest Weight is going to be running a pancake mix making station. So people will be able to leave with a little corn pancake mix to take home. And we'll just get to invite you into this crop that is sacred to many people and precious to all of us.
Yeah.
So Ellie Markovich, thank you for being with me on the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. And I look forward to being together in person on Saturday at the Sanctuary in the Sanctuary Kitchen. And just all throughout Story Harvest.
Can't wait.
Me too.
So much, Amy.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Chris Forsyth and the Solar Motel Band ask, have we mistaken the bottle for the whiskey inside?
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Melanie Lekasevic reports for Capital Region Independent Media that a proposal to buy the Grace United Methodist Church building and turn it into the new Coyman's Town Hall brought out a packed crowd at a public hearing September 14th. Town Supervisor George McHugh explained, and I quote, last year, the town board had voted to bond funds to build a brand new town building here. This building is partially being used and the rest is not being used because of mold. Rather than put money into this building, we looked at bonding money and borrowing some and using some fund balance to build a new building. That was voted down by the people of the town, which you have to respect. And so we are looking at other options, end quote. The church is in a quiet residential cul-de-sac with limited ingress and egress, not so ideal for a municipal building with a police station and court. The church and school building is for sale for $549,000, with about $4 million needed to be spent for renovations. McHugh said, and I quote, it is one of the bigger buildings in the town and village, and it is zoned for municipal building purposes. We are looking at it as an option. It is not something we have already decided. It is not something that we have made an offer on. We promise to bring options to the people, and this is another option, end quote. Resident Yvonne Shackleton was opposed to the purchase, saying, and I quote, people like to walk their babies and their dogs and their families there, and I feel that if we have lots of extra traffic up there, it will destroy the aesthetic. We love it up there. It's a little bit removed from the hustle and bustle of the town, and we would be reluctant to see that change, end quote. Resident Michael Clausen said he was concerned about police cars coming in and out of the property, but could see reasons to move the town business there, saying, and I quote, no one wants to see a building crumbling in their neighborhood. That would bring the property values down, and it would still be owned by the residents, so you could still walk up there and probably utilize the space in office hours. If someone else buys the property, it won't be like that. You've got to think about that, too, end quote. Read more about this story in the Upstater. Philip Pantuso reports in the Times Union that Socrates officials initially denied a request under New York's Freedom of Information Law for the retirement and or resignation records of former police chief Joseph Sanagra when he resigned last month. But on September 18th, the Socrates town clerk released what she said was Sanagra's entire retirement notice. A four-sentence email sent from a personal account to her and an administrative assistant for the chief. The August 9th message said, and I quote, please be advised that I am making notification of my retirement from the town of Socrates. My last day of employment will be Sunday, September 24th, 2023. I will be exercising all rights provided under Article 7, 8, and 9 of the Chief's CBA with the town. Mary, I will reach out to you relative payouts, end quote. The message was sent to Town Clerk Lisa Stanley and Mary Marabella, the administrative assistant for the police chief. The email resignation came while Sanagra was suspended during an ongoing Ulster County District Attorney's Office investigation of sexual assault and harassment allegations against an officer and the department handling of that case. Stanley denied the original Freedom of Information Law request for privacy reasons. An official with the State Committee on Open Government said the town would have a difficult time making that argument in court. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Dennis Yusko reports for New York State of Politics that a new Siena College poll finds Republicans, Democrats, and Independents in New York agreeing on the top issues facing the state. They just put them in different orders. Democrats have affordable housing and cost of living as their top issues, while Republicans focus on migrants being relocated here by Southern Republican governors. Siena College pollster Stephen Greenberg said, and I quote, "In assessing the severity of problems facing New York, there is surprisingly considerable agreement among Democrats, Republicans, and Independents. At least 80% of each partisan group thinks the cost of living in the state is a major problem. At least 71% of each say affordable housing is a major problem, as do at least 64% of each about crime, and at least 51% of each about the migrant influx," end quote. The poll also found that New York voters prefer President Joe Biden against former President Donald Trump by 52% to 31%, up from 47% to 34% last month. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow. And now, here's your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days, well, on Wednesday, it will be sunny with a temperature high near 70 degrees. On Wednesday night, it will be clear with a temperature low of around 46 degrees. And on Thursday, it will be sunny with a temperature high near 69 degrees. And on Thursday night, mostly clear with a temperature low of around 49 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Here is 2013 new music from James Brandon Lewis. Someday we'll all be free.